Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer. Welcome to episode 171 of the Brown County Hour. This is Dave Seastrom.
And Sarah Lytle, along with the rest of the crew. This month we pay tribute to our friend and longtime Brown County Hour member, Jeff Foster, who passed away recently. We'll reflect on his impact on our show and on the local music scene. And we will hear him do what he did best, play guitar.
We also have two on-location reports for you. You'll hear chainsaw artist Chris Trotter creating his art, and we celebrate Pride Month with a visit to Big Queer Hangout, a monthly social mixer for the LGBT community and their allies.
You'll also hear essays from Dave Seastrom and Jim Eagleman.
This is Chuck Wills. Our first segment is dedicated to the memory of our former technical producer, Jeff Foster, who died recently after an extended battle with cancer. For 6 years, and more all-night engineering sessions than he could count, Jeff was the founding technical producer of the Brown County Hour, before passing his studio chair to me. Everyone on our crew has a few words to honor Jeff's memory, but first, here's a clip from episode 53, back in August 2016, when we celebrated his retirement.
Okay, guys, here we go. On three. One, two.
Okay, Jeff. Actually, you're on the wrong side of the mic tonight. This is all about you.
I'm not used to being on this side of the window, I'll tell you.
We've had the distinct pleasure of working with Jeff Foster from the very beginning of the show, and he has a little announcement to make. We've got a little shift taking place in the show, and after 6 years of loyal service, Mr. Foster is moving on to other endeavors.
Yeah. 6 years, 52 episodes, and I was part of the Brown County Hour since the very first planning meeting back in what was that, 2009, wasn't it, Pam?
Yeah.
Very first meeting, and it took about a year of us, you know, getting together and talking about, you know, how we would put this show together. And all the time, I kind of had my eye on the chair that I've sat in for the last 6 years. It happened, and I did the engineering on the very first show. And every Tuesday night since, and
the rest is history.
But in recent years, you know, I've been thinking that, well, you know, I'm not getting any younger, and we've
all noticed that, Jeff.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So I started scouting about for someone who had the particular skill set that this job requires, and I was very, very fortunate to have stumbled. Well, I didn't stumble across him. He's an old friend, Mr. Chuck Wills, who is now on the other side of the window. Oh, hi, Chuck.
That's right. Chuck is now recording you.
Yeah. And it took a little bit of, you know,
prodding.
Prodding, yeah.
Talking. Encouragement. I think all of us encouraged him. We sent him friendly emails for, a couple of weeks.
Or something. I'm sure it was like, please, take Foster's place. Someone's got to do it. So he's taking over the engineering, the final post-production of the show, as well as eventually the website, which I built at the very beginning and have been managing all these years. So
you're moving to Boca Raton and drinking pina coladas for the rest of your
exactly,
life?
Exactly, yeah. No, I'm just doing what I do otherwise, except that I'll have Tuesday nights free. You know, yeah. I'm still playing music, do my regular Wind Down Wednesday gig at the Hobnob,
yeah.
Which I'm into my fourth year doing that. Well, I'm kind of between bands right now. I still do some weekend work, kind of chilling, you know, and I'm doing a lot of work around the house, building a pier earlier this week.
Yeah, he's had my nail gun for a year.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him back. I offered to buy that fair and square. Yeah.
If we could digress a little bit, I did have a question because as or before this got started, you weren't really associated with WFHB and you didn't live in Brown County. So what actually made that connection?
That is right. When the Brown County Hour started, I mean, it was like, okay, this is made by Brown Countyans for Brown Countyans. Because I'd been playing music, you know, at the Chateau and BCI and various places for a long time prior to actually moving to Brown County, I had a lot of friends here, not least among them Pam, that I was given a pass.
Out of desperation on our part.
Yeah. Well, it was like, you know, the show needed someone to do that stuff. And back then, I was still living in Ellettsville. And I'd come over and gather the stuff and take it home and do the final post-production work on it. But in 2012, my wife Rhonda and I decided to move to Brown County. And since then, I don't think I maybe missed one Tuesday because I was sick or something. But
I think you went to Florida for...
Well, there was that. Yeah, I was on vacay.
We've seen a lot of people come and go, haven't we?
Oh, well, yeah. You know, and I have mixed feelings about it. I'm glad that the show is moving on into Chuck's hands. To be honest, what I will miss is the good camaraderie of our meetings here. I mean, our meetings are just exceptional. I mean, they're witty, they're funny, they're... talk about history. We talk about all kinds of things.
And current events,
definitely, in politics and just everything imaginable. And it all happens, you know, just around the work that we do to put together the
and
show.
And around Vera's food.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's an important...
That may be. That may be number one.
That's why you really came.
Yeah. I may miss Vera's snacks, most of all. And the friendships that we've created and reinforced here, that will be the part that I miss. The work, you know, I am totally happy to pass off the work to Chuck, and knowing that that is in good hands.
Right.
I'm leaving it in the state that I wanted to leave it in, which is, you know, to do it responsibly. Yeah, it's a unique band. You know, I don't know. It was a few years ago that we decided that a six-person group is ideal. You know, three men, three women, so we cover all the points of view, and we're all different, but we all share this Brown County centric thing, you know, and we're all kind of, you know, have that attitude or outlook on things.
And that's all the chairs we have, too.
That's true. Well, that's true. Right. Without getting into the folding chairs.
Right. Well, and it would create a hierarchy that we really don't want.
You know,
well, that's right. Yeah.
One thing this show has done is we've learned a lot about the county that we didn't know.
That's
right. The different people that came in and we interviewed and.
Oh, yeah. So many great things. Just a plethora of other things that are going on that, yeah, I wouldn't have known about necessarily otherwise.
Authors and artists.
Oh, yeah.
Sam Fritsch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My beat has been kind of handling the music, you know, mm-hmm. since I'm a musician. So it's been my thing to contact various artists and bands and get them queued up to come in and participate in the show. And again, you know, a lot of them I would have had no exposure to their music otherwise, probably, you know, because
well,
I don't get out.
Same for our listening audience. I mean, this is everyone benefits from this.
Yeah.
And then we have tremendously benefited from your many years of fine service, Mr. Mm-hmm. Foster.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, David.
And debating some of your concepts.
Well, yeah.
That's right. Jeff is always enlightening or in darkening, depending.
Well, we all have our unique points of view,
yeah.
and none of us are afraid to express them at this table. So,
and that's because we are friendly and accepting.
That's right. That's right. We are tolerant. That's we are inclusive.
Well, I'm sure going to miss you, pal. It's been a great experience working with you.
Oh, thanks. Well, you know, I suspect that this will not be the last month that I walk through this door.
Mm-hmm. I certainly hope so.
I'm toying with the ideas of how I might contribute content to the show, which I never have, really. You know, it's I've always done that, and I've just kind of stayed away from creating content for the most part. But, you know, who knows?
Well, best of luck in everything that you do, Jeff.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Rick.
We'll miss you.
Thank you, Pam.
And we'll see you around the hood.
You bet. Thank you, Vera. Thank you, Carrie Ray.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. God bless the Brown County Hour.
Lahaya.
You just heard a clip from 2016 honoring Jeff Foster as he retired from the Brown County Hour. Jeff recently passed away, and today's episode is a tribute to his memory. This is Pam Rader. If it weren't for Jeff Foster's efforts and talents, the Brown County Hour would have folded long ago. I remember when we first met, a mutual friend asked me to hear him play guitar with Frank Jones at Chateau Thomas. I was blown away. It's not every day you hear classical guitar at a local winery. At intermission, while being formally introduced, I said, "I just love your classical guitar playing. It's so romantic." Without a beat, he responded, "That's why I learned it." So forthright and funny, and that's how our relationship continued on the show. He was approachable, open with his opinions, and made me laugh with his dry humor. Producing the show with him was a lot of fun, and the wine helped, too. And now we'll hear from Sarah.
I knew Jeff as the Hobnob Wednesday guitarist. He delightfully took my requests for gypsy jazz, adding spice and flair to those nights. Vera Grubbs has a story to share from her early radio days working with Jeff and the crew.
Vera here. I remember Jeff very well. He was a bit of a curmudgeon, but he had his high times. My favorite memory of Jeff is the time the production crew pasted a photo of Jeff's head on the body of Burt Reynolds. It became the centerfold of a local magazine, one copy only. It was hilarious. I do think Jeff rather enjoyed it. And now it's Chuck's time.
As you've heard, Jeff was the guy who brought me into the Brown County Radio Hour and taught me how the whole thing worked. And by taught me, I mean he basically threw me into the deep end and watched to see if I would drown. I remember him telling me to come over to his studio at 7 a.m. on the day that the show was to be finished. I showed up half awake, and Jeff handed me a cup of coffee and about a month's worth of recordings that somehow needed to become a one-hour show before the deadline. That was Jeff. He was calm, totally unbothered, and slightly amused that I was panicking. We spent the day cutting tape, moving segments around, arguing over timing, laughing at things that probably weren't as funny as we thought they were after hours in front of the computer. And somewhere along the way, the coffee turned into wine, which honestly felt like a pretty accurate summary of working with Jeff. He had opinions about everything, strong opinions. But he was also a banjo player, so I think the weird theories about the world just come with the instrument. Still, beneath the dry humor and the occasional curmudgeonly streak, Jeff had the eyes and ears of a true artist, and it was a joy to just hang out and create something together. I'm going to miss him. Next, let's hear from Rick.
Well, this is Rick, and there's a lot been said about Jeff, and I think most of it was meant admirably. So I certainly would not dispute that. But I had a kind of a different experience with him one time. I sold him 10 trees off of my property in Bloomington, and we had somebody come in with a wood miser and cut it into boards, and we took him to his house, and then I helped him install the boards around his the living area of his house. And believe me when I tell you, he was just as critical and precise about all those endeavors as he was about his music and all the things that he was involved with. The whole time he was wearing his gloves to protect his hands. So that was him. And here's Dave.
The first time I met Jeff Foster was on the phone. He noticed my prolific writing on Facebook and asked if I'd be interested in providing content for the Brown County Hour radio show. I had an early interest in the show, and Jeff's invitation made that happen. In those days, we met in the little cracker box that was the original location of the Brown County History Center. That building was torn down, and when the new facility was being built, we were in exile. Graciously, Jeff shared his private studio in town, and we made the show at that location until we finally moved into our current studio when the new History Center was completed. Jeff was a curmudgeon of the highest order, who called me by my last name and was a relentless taskmaster. He was also a perfectionist who shaped the show into what it is now. His sense of humor and dry wit will always endear him to me. Fare thee well, Jeff Foster. It was an honor to know you. And now Chad has a few things to say.
I worked with Jeff on this program for the first 3 years of its existence, from 2010 to 2013, when I stepped away from WFHB for a while. We didn't always see eye to eye, but I always admired the tenacity of his spirit. Some might call that stubbornness, but that makes it sound like it's a bad thing, and it's not. I also admired his technical proficiency as both a show producer and as a musician. Watching him work in audio editing programs, mastering content for air, I've spent most of my adult life doing audio production, and with Jeff, I had met a true equal. As a musician, wow, I won't ever be as good at anything as Jeff was at playing guitar. Watching Jeff play was always a joy. I love seeing people do what they are meant to do. Jeff and I disagreed on a great many things, but he was part of my Firehouse family. That unlikely convocation of people who otherwise might never have crossed paths. But we did, and my life was all the richer for it. Rest in peace, Jeff.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from our Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at rbrowncounty.com.
In segment 2, naturalist Jim Eagleman says it's warbler season in Brown County.
And the segment closes with the Jeff Foster song, Memories of Zagreb. But first, local chainsaw artist Chris Trotter demonstrates his craft as we go on location to his shop in downtown Nashville.
We are outside of Antique Alley. I'm Sarah Lytle.
I'm Rick Fettig.
With the Brown County Hour, and we're talking with Chris Trotter. And Chris is our local chainsaw artist. And one thing I got to say about Chris is he is one of the most dedicated artists to his work, to his craft. He is all weather, almost every day, out here working.
Thank you.
So why chainsaw?
I was always into wood, and I used to be a finished carpenter when I was young. I was into construction, finished carpentry, and I always thought, I need to take this piece of wood at night and just mess with it, you know, and it just kind of led to whittling, which, you know, my grandpa used to bring me down here to Brown County, and I seen the whittlers down here, so, and I went to Gatlinburg as a kid and also seen some of the carvers there, so I knew it was a thing, you know, so I just kind of thought I'd just start practicing, and here I am.
Pretty much self-taught then. Is there a type of wood that you prefer, or some that are like, don't bring me that?
Over time, I've kind of adapted. At first, I would wrestle heavy logs, you know, but after a while, you figure out what's lighter and, you know, more usable, and white pine is light, and it's really carvable and strong, so I use that a lot, and I use some other lighter woods too, like cedar and poplar. But then I also will use hardwoods, especially if I'm going on site, and I don't have to handle the weight of the wood, you know.
Well, you did a bear up on the way to my house up near Al's garage.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that was from a standing tree that they cut the top out of and left, what is it, probably 10 feet of the trunk there.
That was a fun job. You know, a lot of people love bears. We love to do a little bit of everything, and anything that's a challenge is always good, you know?
What are some of the other pieces you've done in town that when people walking through Nashville can go, ah, that's the chainsaw guy?
Well, for instance, the Abe Martin on the corner here. I've done some things at the YMCA, like an eagle at the Y, and so many it's even hard to even just say one, you know what I mean?
All right, Chris, show us your stuff. Fire something up.
So this is what I use mainly. It's a small chainsaw, one-arm chainsaw, and it's got a smaller dime tip bar in it that's only has one tooth hitting at a time if you use the tip. And most chainsaws have like three or four teeth hitting at the same time, so that's why it jumps so much. So I use this to shape and a little bit of everything. Sometimes I use a bigger chainsaw to cut some areas out, but this is my main thing here, and I'll show you how it works here.
How do you get the detail with the chainsaw? I mean, some of your work is so detailed, so are there other tools that you use?
I use the chainsaw a lot, and the way you get detail with the chainsaw is it's all about the way you turn the chainsaw. You always got to know which direction to go into the wood, because if you do, then you can actually back up to a corner and come back out. But if you're the wrong way, as soon as you hit it, you're going to dig, and it's going to jump. Mm-hmm. So it's all about the turn of the wrist. After the chainsaw, I usually use this guy here. It's a die grinder with carbide bits. This happens to be a teardrop bit, which is really versatile. You can use it to do a lot of things, so it's my go-to. And I'll show you how it works. You can kind of come in and see these marks right here, these folds in the clothes. You can kind of even them out by dragging it. Or you can, for instance, come in on the areas of the nose and kind of say that it fits right in certain areas, you know, that makes it and evens everything out.
You call that a
die grinder? Yep. If anybody that works with wood, they gotta have one of those. I'm telling you, the die grinder. The way I sand is I take a orbital sander And the thing is you can do so much with an orbital sander because you can take the edge of it and put the edge wherever you want. So, for instance, like I could get in this area here, just by dragging it.
And there's another event that has something to do with Johnny Depp.
Yeah, it's the Johnny Depp People's Choice Art Contest, and it's nationwide, any kind of art medium, mm-hmm. and they choose so many people, and I was lucky to have been chosen.
Oh, you were chosen for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, we had to sign up for it, yeah. but they only choose. It's kind of juried, mm-hmm. you know. So they choose certain people.
What an honor to have that. Well, I remember talking with you earlier, and you were mentioning when I was talking about how dedicated you are to your craft, and you were mentioning you're just so loyal to Brown County and to this town of Nashville. You love it so much, and you said you could follow the money.
Yeah, I could. We could easily just. Especially when the kids grow up, we could easily just say, hey, let's just try California or you know, there's a lot of carvers up in like the Northwest coast, and a lot more carving enthusiasts, mm-hmm. so they make more money up there. But I love Brown County, and I want to be part of Brown County's history and maintaining an art colony here. You know, it's not all about money, you know.
And you're the guy. You're our chainsaw guy. You're we could get another chainsaw artist, but he wouldn't be you.
Yeah, you're kind
of. Or she.
You're kind of one of a kind here, aren't you?
I think so. You know, I mean, I don't think a lot of chainsaw carvers have survived.
And the name of your business is Wooden Wonders.
Wooden Wonders, yep.
You have a Facebook page as well?
Yeah, we're on Facebook under Chris Trotter or Wooden Wonders.
Okay. Well, we want you to stay safe and keep carving and keep sending that out to. You know, that Brown County art essence. This is Sarah Lytle.
And Rick Fettig.
With the Brown County Hour, and we're with Chris Trotter.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
The warblers are here. Turn your ears upward to the tallest of the treetops in your favorite woods, you will hear buzzings, slight trills, and all kinds of insect-like calls, and they don't sound anything like the calls you heard all winter at your feeders. It's warbler season in the hills of Brown, and just like the excitement that mushroomers feel, all birders are now grabbing their binoculars and watching the treetops for any kind of movement. Wood warblers are a bonus to any bird lover. They show the brightest colors of any springtime arrival, occupy the tops of most trees as they search for insects and tiny worms that eat leaves. Couple these characteristics with their tiny size, their fast-moving habit of flitting about in the trees, their colors of yellow, greenish-blue, sky blue, orange, black, and bright blue combinations, and you've got yourself a challenge. The warblers are here. I said tiny size, and this has to make them the most difficult to identify as they flit about. Most bird books put the total length of warblers at 5 inches, but some like the blue-winged, the Tennessee, and the Parula are at 4.5 inches. This small size must energize them, it seems, for they hardly stay still for even a few seconds. And even if they did, you'd still need to study the markings on the tail, the back, and the throat. Two, you would always looking up at them from the ground below, your neck stretched to its max. Warbler neck, as birders call it. And then when you think you've got a good look, off they flit to the next branch and so on. So many birders rely on all the many apps now on cell phones to help confirm a call to a bird they are hearing. That's exactly what I did recently to help identify a call I kept hearing around our house. A cerulean warbler had stopped over in our woods, like they have in other woods, as I hear from my birder friends in southern Indiana, and we all claim our excitement. Why? Well, it happens that this one is one of the species of concerns, the cerulean, as numbers over the past 10 years have dwindled. Scientists have determined by surveys, nesting data, and actual springtime counts that some species are not faring as well as others. They all migrate the same distances generally from Central and South America into the U.S. each spring, so the cerulean, along with others, are in trouble, and are targeted for research. Luckily, due to the work being conducted by the Hardwood Ecosystem Experiment, the HEE, a 100-year study conducted by several universities and the Indiana DNR Division of Forestry, several nesting sites of the cerulean and other birds have been confirmed here in Brown County. This large green chunk of continuous woodlands, right here where we live, it's a magnet for these migrants. We're lucky to be residents of this vast forest in Brown County, and every birder I know cherishes this place. Some bird identification books in their chapters on warblers have begun printing what looks like the bottom half of the bird's body. The tail markings with white stripes and the belly are the most obvious to point out, as it is this view, looking at the bottom of the bird, that we see. It can be helpful to identify the warbler. That is, if you get to stand still long enough, you can tolerate your stiff neck, and you purposely pass up the colorful breeding plumage of the back, the neck, and the throat to concentrate just on the belly and the butt. It's a trade-off, but one that may help you get the proper ID. An ornithology professor during a late winter, early spring term once told us students some good advice. He said to first become proficient with the winter birds at the feeder, as they are less in number and fairly predictable in their daily appearance, nuthatches, chickadees, the several kinds of woodpeckers, juncos, jays, doves, cardinals, sparrows, titmice, and finches will not overwhelm you when you identify them. Then, as spring arrives and you're ready to be challenged more, the thrushes, the vireos, tanagers, and warblers arrive. New birds to identify, and they act, call, feed, and behave differently than what you've been seeing. I've always remembered that and shared this bit of advice when teaching bird classes at the Parks Nature Center. And true to each spring, the calls particularly are what we need to review. So the CDs and now the apps are played each day. So now that you can recall a favorite bird, for Kay and me, it tends to be the wood thrush. And we tend to listen for them each morning. And true to its regular occurrence coming in from southern Indiana, we're thrilled to hear this flute-like call. And that means spring has arrived. I hope you'll hear some new calls in your woods these days. And with any decent pair of optics, a good dose of patience, and some neck support, I like to take an aluminum chair into the woods with me, watch for any kind of movement in the treetops. That's probably a warbler, and you're about to start an exciting hobby of warbler watching. Jim Eagleman for Nature Ramblings, WFHB, the Brown County Hour. Thanks for listening. Good warbler watching.
Memories of Zagreb, or Sjećanja na Zagreb, is the tune that started the entire Midnight in Zagreb CD project, really. It was the fall and winter of 1988 that I lived in Croatia, then still part of Yugoslavia. I was sitting in Mama Ruzica's kitchen, and she said, "Write a song I'd like." Well, I'm thinking, first, it has to be in a minor key, because Croatians love minor keys. Then it should have a bit of a Latin groove, because that's kind of my thing. Then it had to be tragically romantic. Well, Memories of Zagreb really isn't all that tragic in tone, but the other two things came together, I think. I sat there and made it up in about 20 minutes. Just one of those things where the task and the inspiration aligned, and the tune kind of wrote itself. I still love playing it.
That was Memories of Zagreb by local musician Jeff Foster, who passed away recently. For years, he was a core member of the Brown County Hour crew.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn, located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com.
In our final segment, Dave Seastrom chronicles the replacement of various body parts. We'll close the show with the song Ira Pember by Stella and Jane, featuring Jeff Foster on banjo. But first, June is Pride Month for the LGBT community. We take you on location to the Hen House Bar at the Bird's Nest Cafe for the Big Queer Hangout Social Mixer. Held on the first Sunday evening of every month, Bethany, Jarrah, Abby, Kurt, and bartender Quentin all chime in and invite you to be a part of this community.
All right, this is Chad Crothers for the Brown County Hour on WFHB, and I am at the Bird's Nest Hen House for the Big Queer Hangout happening monthly here. And why don't we go around the room and just say who you are and what your connection is to this. Go ahead.
Hi, my name's Bethany. I'm a local artist here in Nashville, and my connection is I just show up every month and help where I can.
My name's Jarrah Brown. I am a new Brown County resident, and I'm one of the co-hosts of the Big Queer Hangout.
My name's Abby Moses. I help co-host the Big Queer Hangout, too. I am involved in all sorts of areas between the hosts, whether it be making graphics or social media promotion, but really I'm just here for the people.
And my name is Kurt Eagleman, and I'm a Brown County native, and I come and just hang out and meet and mingle.
Well, you guys have a great turnout here. Like, there's I think our listeners can hear in the background in the main room, there's like a very steady buzz of conversation happening. People are coming and going. I just found out about this. So, like, tell me, how did this all get started?
The first one happened, I think, in May.
Yeah, last May.
Yeah, so we want to pay homage to the fact that Kurt and Abby with Second Story Studio really started bringing us together around the first ever Pride-themed art show that happened in June. And I think because we were hanging out and talking about things, a group of us wanted to start doing something on a more regular basis. And Quentin is a bartender at the Hen House, has this amazing space, and we just decided to start utilizing it on a monthly basis. Abby, anything you'd want to add?
Yeah, I guess around this time last year, all of us had finally kind of come together for the first time and realized that, hey, it's really nice to be able to meet here and be authentic with each other. It's really come a long way. I never expected it to really fly like it has, but it's pretty amazing seeing everyone come out and having that consistent community space to grow with each other.
Yeah, Abby, you mentioned like the queer community being here for a long time is what you said. And let's dive a little deeper into that, because I think maybe an outsider might not think of Brown County, Indiana as being exactly like a hotbed of queer culture. What would be your response to that? What do you think about any of you? What do you think?
Yeah, you know, Kurt might be able to talk a little bit more about this, but one part that I was really surprised by when this started up was how many queer elders there were here showing up to the events, because as a young queer person, I think it's easy to feel isolated in the world. You don't necessarily realize the connection that you have to people older than you, because a lot of the time we come from places or families where it's not the norm. You know, you don't have many people here who have queer family or queer elders in their lives. And so having that become apparent through these meetings has been really sweet and lovely. And I know there has been other connections to queer history. Kurt, do you have anything else to say? Because I know you knew more about that from our Pride exhibition.
Well, just, you know, kind of the history of Brown County being an artist colony, you know, art is inherently queer in a lot of ways just because it has a tendency to push boundaries, reflect humanity. So there's no doubt that when the artists came and settled here, that a handful, if not many of them, were queer themselves. It wasn't documented back then, so all we have is, you know, kind of like speculation. But queer people are everywhere. So even Brown County, even in the middle of, you know, nowhere, but we're between, you know, Columbus and Bloomington. So I really commend this group for being consistent, having something where people can show up. And it's kind of a testament to where we are today. People are really wanting connection. So it's pretty special.
We're hanging out at the Big Queer Hangout. This is Chad for WFHB with the organizers of the Big Queer Hangout. So if someone listening wants to come out and be a part of this and support this, like what would they expect if they show up?
The really cool thing about being in this place is that a lot of people have showed up for the first time and they always end up leaving saying, thank you so much for having this time in this space, because it feels so welcoming and inviting and they feel safe to be authentic. And I think that's like the really beautiful thing that it offers. And it's the beginning, it's like the first Sunday of every month. So you know when to show up, what time, what place. You might not see the people that you've seen before, but you'll definitely meet somebody new. And we've definitely seen like friendships and stuff blossom from like us hanging out together. It's wonderful.
I'd like to add that, so it's at a bar, but not everybody drinks. If you're sober, if you even can't afford a drink, then you're still more than welcome here. We often bring food to share. We have people as young as 21 and as old as in their 80s. So it's people of all ages are welcome. And it's also not something, you don't have to be queer. You can be allied and still come and support. And it's a place where we try intentionally to give people a space to ask questions and learn what they don't know about.
Bartender Quentin is here now, and perfect timing because I have one more question for you guys, which is, this is taking place at the Hen House, which is part of the Bird's Nest. The Bird's Nest is going to be moving soon over to the former Hobnob. And so what becomes of this gathering and after that move, Quentin?
Just because moving doesn't mean that the gathering stops. We're just going to be meeting in a different location. It's all the same people. Work in the event, it'll just be in a different spot. We'll have some prime real estate there on the corner of town, and it's nice being tucked into the Hidden Garden, but I think it'll be even nicer to let the world know that we're here.
Okay, so to close out, Quentin, just remind our listeners where and when and what we are talking about here.
So this happens the first Sunday of every month, starts at 5 p.m., generally goes until late, so show up whenever, be you.
What I've noticed, and I'm in my 40s, so I am not one of the late night people, but we tend to have an older crew that starts us out. And then by 9 p.m., it tends to be significantly younger. If you are looking for time with queer elders as well as younger folks, getting here is 7 to 8 is usually the best mixing time.
I think it's just been incredible, the turnout from the community and from other communities. It's I didn't realize it was something that the community needed, but seeing the support month after month, is it needed to be here, needed to happen.
And if you're listening to this and you hear this, please come and join us. It would be amazing. You know, we need connection, we need each other, we need community. So do not be afraid, just come and hang out with us.
The addition of new parts has slowly crept up on my wife Becky and me. It starts out simple enough, usually with a childhood dental procedure. As teeth become decayed, the first line of defense is a filling. By the time I reached maturity, my sugar-rich diet rotted the center of all of my molars and bicuspids, and each of my occlusal surfaces were filled with questionable mercury-silver amalgam. Toxicity aside, this dental repair lasted until early middle age, and I was able to eat without complaint. Middle age is when the noticeable changes began to occur. First, there was the need to wear glasses. I don't like wearing glasses, but I like being able to see, so I put up with them. About the same time, the fillings in my teeth began to fail. Even though they don't tell you at the time, this is completely predictable. One by one, my failing teeth were augmented with crowns. So far, most of them have held up, but there were a few teeth that gave it up and had to be pulled. This was fun. But it's better to pluck out an offending tooth than to suffer the consequences of a painful infection. Typically, the void is filled with a dental bridge. The procedure restores the ability to chew, and that's a good thing. Recently, I needed an implant. This is a relatively new development in dental restoration where they make a new tooth, insert the base into your jaw, and screw the replacement that, for all the world, feels like it grew there. Along the way, there were broken bones that were knitted back together and set in plaster to heal. It's a good thing that this works as well as it does, because hobbling around on a deformed leg or trying to use a mangled arm just won't do. While this isn't exactly getting new parts, it falls into the general category of maintenance, which is all part of keeping up with the changes. Stitches serve a similar function, and it's better to have a neatly sewn up, gaping wound than to let it heal on its own into something lumpy and unattractive. A case in point is the 12 stitches in my forehead that was so neatly sewn together that most folks don't even see it. At some point, the replacement options became more serious. From early childhood, I had a hip disorder called Perthes. As the cartilage developed in my right hip, instead of forming a nicely rounded femoral head, I ended up with a disc that would dislocate at the drop of a hat. Today, this disorder is treated with physical therapy, but I was subjected to some quackery, and I wore a shock-absorbing brace for 3 years. Like most kids with this malady, I eventually grew out of it, but I was left with lifelong arthritis that only got worse with age. Eventually, there was no other option, and after several years of agitating and numerous highly questionable steroid shots, I was able to convince the powers that be that I needed a new hip. 6 years ago this May, Becky drove me to St. Francis in Mooresville, where a new hip was installed in an outpatient procedure. It took the attending nurse longer to slip on my compression hose than the procedure took. A foot-long Coney dog on the way home was the best thing I've ever eaten. 6 weeks later, my new hip was completely pain-free and fully functional, and it continues to serve me without complaint. For the last couple of years, Becky's right knee has been going south. She went through the Band-Aid treatment of steroid shots that offer temporary relief but not a long-term solution. A couple of months ago, her condition had deteriorated to bone on bone, and a decision was made to replace her knee. 4 weeks ago, the big day arrived. We were up at O Dark 30, and the adventure of knee replacement recovery began. Again, this was an outpatient procedure, and a few hours later, I was sitting next to her helping to bring her out of anesthesia. She wanted a crispy chicken sandwich, and we hit the drive-thru on the way home. The first week or so was painfully challenging, but ever so slowly, her condition has improved. She hated the narcotics and quit them after the second day, and now she's up and down the stairs, feeding the dogs and the birds, and making dinner. We live in amazing times. The maladies I've described would, in the past, be debilitating. But today, we're looking at a full recovery, and it's all because we have the ability to get new parts. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
off yonder, you'd see his lights, and Tchaikovsky was the music that they heard. Well, Ira, Ira, hanging out so hard, walking around those canvases and rambling through the yard. Ira, with your whiskers hanging low, left a wife and child for solitude and snow.
Was Ira Pember, featuring Banjo by Jeff Foster, who passed away recently. For years, he was a core member of the Brown County Hour crew.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 171 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. at any time online.
Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services. This episode is dedicated to the memory of our friend and longtime Brown County Hour crew member, Jeff Foster. Rest in peace, Jeff.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County, Indiana.